This is The Legal Lounge from Lanyon Bowdler Solicitors, where you'll hear about many aspects of law in England and Wales with special guests, industry experts and local charities. Here's your host, Amanda Jones.
Hello and welcome to The Legal Lounge, where we now release new episodes every Monday. If you haven't heard previous shows, there's plenty of content for you if you're going through a divorce, want to know more about claiming for injuries, or you're training to be a lawyer. You can listen to these shows on your favourite podcast app and get more information by visiting lblaw.co.uk/podcast. Laura Weir, a partner in the clinical negligence team, is joined by Kayleigh Griffiths, MBE, to discuss the need for safer maternity care in the UK and where we go from here. Kayleigh and her husband Colin Griffiths, MBE, together with Rhiannon Davis, MBE, and her husband Richard Stanton, MBE, were the founding parents of the Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital NHS Trust Maternity Inquiry. Recent data from January 2024 shows that more babies are dying and more mums are dying. Mums in the UK are three times more likely to die than mums in Norway, and there are proportionally more maternal deaths in the UK than Italy, Denmark and France. Recent CQC inspections have also revealed that more maternity units are failing to reach minimum standards. And in a survey by the CQC, an increasing number of women reported unsafe or uncompassionate care. With maternity care more unsafe than ever, Kayleigh, Colin, Rhiannon and Richard have set their sights on asking the governments of England, Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland to launch a cross-nation review into maternity care.
Hello, I'm Laura Weir and I'm joined today by Kayleigh Griffiths, MBE. Today we're going to talk about a recent campaign that you have launched with your peers about ensuring that there is a four-nation inquiry into maternity care in the UK to ensure that it's much safer. But before we dive into that, I wondered if you want to talk about how you came to do campaigning of this nature and what's your background?
I came about campaigning for safer maternity care following the avoidable death of my daughter Pippa. She died at Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital, and I mean we'd long known that Shrewsbury wasn't the safest place to give birth. I'd requested actually that she be born at the consultant-led hospital at Telford because it was new and it was, you know, the facilities were much better. But because I was classed as low risk, they said that I had to give birth at the midwife-led unit, which we quickly came to the realisation that it was awful. It'd been as run down as it, you know, could be. There were holes in the roof. There were makeshift receptions made out of old wards. And we just weren't happy with that option. So we looked at what the other options were. And I live in North Shropshire, so I'm midway between Telford and Shrewsbury. And the distance from my house to Telford Hospital and the distance from Shrewsbury to Telford was the same. So we sort of worked out that it would have been safer to give birth at home because you have two midwives present, whereas at midwife-led, you only have one. So we made that decision to have Pippa at home. And, you know, it was straightforward home birth, as we'd hoped.
Was Pippa your first child?
No, she was my second child. So, yeah, I'd had Brooke at Shrewsbury, had a bad experience the first time.
Okay, so you knew sort of firsthand what it was like.
Yeah, I knew. And she was not a well baby from when she was born. I mean, the scores and everything they gave her were fine, but she didn't want to feed. You know, they helped me before they went and they said, oh, you'll have a visit later that afternoon. And the guidance said that actually I'd have a visit within the first 24 hours, but they didn't send anybody out that day. Somebody just phoned me up and said, we haven't got the staff. Have you got any issues? And I said, well, she's not feeding. And they said, you know, well, they told me it was normal. On four different occasions, I spoke to them about her well-being and they just said it was fine and it was normal. But yeah, unfortunately, she collapsed at home. We should have had, once 24 hours had passed and we knew we weren't going to get a visit, they said that they'd send someone first thing. Again, they didn't turn up. We just got a phone call. Pippa collapsed before the midwife even arrived.
So when they were calling you to say, was it very much staffing levels? Is that what they were blaming? Or
I think that they didn't want to send anybody out was staffing levels. But because I phoned at like 2:30 in the morning because she was bringing up all this like mucus and it was horrible. And the midwife had said in her witness statements to the coroner that there was nobody birthing and it was a quiet night. So it wasn't just down to staffing.
No, because that I'm just referring really to the recent panorama that I'm sure you've seen. And there was a lot of emphasis on there's not enough midwives, there's not enough staff, and that prohibits them from giving the service that they want. But this obviously contradicts that, doesn't it?
I think it does come. I mean, staffing's massive throughout the NHS as a whole, but I don't think it's the only issue. I think it's a big issue, but not the only issue.
I always think as well, and I'm not sure if anyone said this previously, but there's really good maternity units who are operating with lower staffing levels. And so it just takes away from that, really, that there must be ways of managing it. This isn't a new problem. So obviously then, sadly, you lost Pippa. Did you say there was an inquest afterwards, or what did that process look like
for you? Inquest didn't happen for, I think, 12 months afterwards. So what happened was there was a post-mortem which took a long time because obviously the child death process kicks in. So there was, you know, things like police investigation was initiated first because the hospital trust didn't set it through the serious incident process. So because Pippa died of Group B strep meningitis, they just put it as a natural death. But I'd been having conversations with my midwife saying, you know, I was calling, you know, this should have been picked up. But they just tried to not have that incident process. But because I'm NHS staff for a different trust, I knew that they weren't following the processes.
Yeah.
And that's how I picked them up.
So you had that insight into what they should have been doing and why this didn't reflect that. Just to be clear, obviously you were at home calling for help from midwives. The midwives are employed by SAF.
Yeah.
Because it's just, yeah, I guess once you think about out of hospital, you don't really think it's still the hospital's responsibility, but ultimately it is because they're employed by them. So you have your inquest, and then how did you meet Rhiannon Davis, MBE, who's obviously one of your close peers?
So Rhiannon, once I had established that they were trying to cover up the death and not send it through the incident process, because she'd had quite a lot of publicity the month just shortly before Pippa was born. So I'd seen her in the press. So I actually contacted her through social media, sort of tracked her down and said, look, I really need your help because this is still not resolved.
Yeah, just for background, Rhiannon and her partner Richard, they lost their daughter Kate in 2009, so sometime before, but at the same trust. And I know from sort of background reading that it was different circumstances, but similar themes mm-hmm. in terms of the cover-up or the blame culture. So you reached out to each other, and then when did you think, maybe we're not alone in this?
I think quite quickly, for me, it was, if they've done it to me, they've done it to other people. You know, we knew that they'd done it to Richard and Rhiannon. So it was absolutely, it was just red flag for me. And obviously Rhiannon had heard of other families as well.
Initially, you find 23 cases, is that right? So how did you identify them and sort of approach it? Because obviously every single person's experience and grief is so different, isn't it? And
absolutely, yeah. So we actually spent a long time researching, and mainly Google, to find different it was newspaper articles, mainly. People had been to I think one family had appeared on TV to try and get some answers. So yeah, we found 23 cases.
And you then presented it to Jeremy Hunt in late 2016. So quite quickly, really, because the same year, and asked for an inquiry at the trust. But I can see that there were some hurdles to get to that point.
I think Jeremy Hunt was slightly reluctant because initially we asked for an independent inquiry. And I can't remember. I don't think it was nationally. But he declined the inquiry and said that he would ask somebody to do an independent review. So we were like, you know, yeah, we'll go with that, whatever we can get. And yeah, there were some hurdles, particularly with, I think it was NHS England at the time, of trying to close down the terms of reference. And there was a lot of struggle to get it going, really.
Well, ultimately, it led to Donna Ockenden and her team doing a massive inquiry, and it became the biggest maternity scandal or NHS scandal in the history of the NHS. And we got her final report in 2022. and she identified hundreds of cases. So from the 23, or even from the two of you to the 23 to the hundreds of cases of harm and death that were assessed. And she basically created a blueprint for change in England. I'm sure you know Lanyon Bowdler represent a number of families. We actually had the lead solicitors for the Shrewsbury and Salford maternity scandal. And I think we all felt when that report came out that it was going to be like a watershed moment and everything was going to change. And it was so clear what needed to be done. And we're now nearly 2 years on and it still feels stagnant. And actually, probably worse. We've just obviously had the Embrace data out, which has shown that more babies are dying, more mums are dying. I don't really know what to say at this point, because there are so many voices and so many people saying we need change. But how do you and Trianon and Colin and Richard think that we achieve that? What do you think comes next?
I think at the moment, if we carry on doing the individual units, and I think we've got this mentality of that's not happening here. And I think for years, you know, maybe the CQC haven't been picking up on where maternity units are failing. I know at SATH, shortly before Pippa was born, they were rated as good. And actually, the report shows that they were downgrading incidents. Then they asked the trust to comment on that, and the trust didn't provide any response. So, I mean, we've got a systematic failure that's going on. So, I mean, we can look at individual trusts, but it goes far deeper than that. It goes down to the regulators. I mean, we had to fight for, I think it was close to 5 years to get our midwife struck off. And the hospital trust themselves weren't going to report her to the regulator, you know. And it's a whole process failure, and it's not isolated to one unit. And I think what's coming out now, we're seeing all these families that are facing that same experience of us having to try and uncover the truth, whereas actually the system should be in place that they don't need to do that.
Well, that's it. You know, we sadly continue to get new inquiries, and like really recent, you know, I've just taken on a case where it was September 2023, neonatal death, and it's frustrating. And you know that when they come to you, that even though they know all of the failings, they know what's happened, there might even have been a proper investigation, which I'm not sure occurred. You know, there are improvements in terms of they are investigating these cases, but it's sort of the next step in terms of just like recognizing and compensating and moving forward with changes. It's that bit that they're struggling with, and it's like it's another battle. It's basically another process that they have to go through. So you're now campaigning at the moment for a four nation inquiry, so where England, Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland, the ministers and the now health secretary Victoria Atkins work together in order to find out what's going on. It is important, like you say, the individual trust being looked at is important for that area. But I wonder if it will start to lose effect because people just hear about it in the news and it's like, oh, another failing maternity unit, and the impact just isn't there now. Because like I said, what do we say? What do we do to make it better?
It's almost as if it's become the norm, and that's never okay that a family experiences that. And absolutely, we've called for four nations because we believe that there's learning to be had across the UK. I mean, we can see now what's starting to be uncovered at Swansea Bay, and it's just almost carbon copy what SATH were when we approached them. And it's just so hard for those families to have to keep going and keep going. It's a really difficult way to live your life because you never know what's coming next.
No, and I find that families tend to come to like legal teams at the very end of that process because I don't actually think that families want solicitors involved. I don't think that is something, because it prolongs it and you're trying to grieve and deal with the consequences of your real life. But they come to us frustrated because the processes beforehand have failed them. And so they're like, well, I just don't know which other direction to take. But I'm from Wales. I've born and raised in Wales. And it's really nice to have Wales included in this because it's not only the Welsh Trust, and you know, we've had Cwm Taf scandal in 2019 where they identified babies that died unnecessarily, and like you said, Swansea Bay. But it's not just the families and the trust in Wales, it's the ones that travel. So, you know, I live in Mid Wales, so you would be giving birth in Shrewsbury or Salford. you know, a large number of the families impacted by SATH were actually Welsh families. And it's just the lack of consideration for that sort of border.
They're not heard.
It's like, oh, you're in Wales, it's a different minister, it's a different system. But actually, no, they're crossing the border to give birth. And so they should have voices as well and input in their provision. And it's just, yeah, like you said, weighing up, do you have the home birth? Because you don't feel safe in your hospital. But if you're living in rural Wales, if you have a home birth and something goes wrong, how are you getting to hospital? Aside from the call for the Four Nation Inquiry, you're looking at future-proofing maternity care, making it better for future generations. And that's so important because, you know, we have children. And right now, the thought of my daughter giving birth at Shrewsbury or Telford is petrifying.
Yeah, absolutely future-proofing. I mean, my daughter is 12. Even just reflecting on, because I had a little boy after Pippa died, if I'd have known then what I know now, I'd never have had him. I'd never have had another child because it's just so scary. And in fact, the experience I had with him following Pippa at Telford Consultant Led Unit, it was horrific.
Oh, really? I was going to ask, how was it, you know, having a baby after a loss? Like, how was that?
It was hard because, you know, he wasn't planned. It was, and he came quite quickly after Pippa. So he was born a year and 2 weeks after Pippa. We lost Pippa. Because we'd gone straight into finding out what had happened, we'd never had time to sort of almost process what we'd gone through. The processes they put in place for us after he were born were brilliant. So we had a scheme called the CONI, which is the care of the next infant. And we had like a passport for him. So if we had any concerns, we could literally take him into a GP or we could take him into the hospital and he would be seen instantly. And that was fantastic. But we had a planned induction with him. They refused me a Group B strep test because they said, well, you don't need it. We'll just take it like you have. So there was that. So I had the antibiotics in labour, but I labour fast. So I didn't have enough time to get all of the antibiotics in. So when he was born, he had blue lips. And I said, I'm not happy with how he's looking. Can you get him checked? They said, he's fine. And I said, no, I would like you to get him checked, please. So they took him away and said, we'll bring him back shortly. And after an hour of him being away, I was getting really quite anxious. And they said, oh, we'll take you to him. What they didn't tell me was that he was in intensive care and they just wheeled me through and he was hooked up to the exact same machines that Pippa had. And it was just, you know, it was like, oh my God. And I said to my husband, he's going to die, isn't he? And that was it. That, you know, it was an open ward. They shut the curtains around us so nobody could see us because we were, you know, high profile at that time. And a woman walked in and said, we only brought our child in because we'd heard about Group B strep death. And they just whipped her off and said, let's take you for a whistle-stop tour of the ward.
That is crazy, isn't it? We talk a lot about, well, we've talked previously about the culture and things and how the trust can say they're making all of these practical changes. And there are, like I said, the reporting and investigations. Like I'm seeing now some really detailed investigations with failures identified. And, you know, that's real progress in my eyes from what I've seen historically. But the culture and the personal skills, I don't know how you deal with that. It's so deep rooted. You are seen as the patient as a problem. You would have thought that they would have been a bit more sensitive to what had just happened a year ago. But it's interesting, the Group B strep is a whole other conversation that I'd love to have with you. I've campaigned for years. We'll come back to that another time. So tell me how you're going about getting it at the forefront of people's minds.
So at the moment, we've got a petition ongoing. So I think we're just about to hit 35,000 signatures on the petition. A lot of social media, a lot of trying to get publicity for the campaign. Just raising awareness. We've written to all the governments across the UK. We had Wales' response yesterday. And
oh, yeah.
It's shocking.
Oh, great. Yeah. There's me saying, we want to be involved. And then we're asked to be involved. No, and it's like, no.
They said they were absolutely assured that everything was fine in Wales.
Okay, well, let's see then. Maybe because the focus has been on England, that until we have the individual reviews like Swansea Bay and Come Taff and until they start mounting up, which I know is not, you know, you want to get ahead of these things, but I do think that there is a lot of burying their heads until it's, you know,
I think
glaringly obvious.
Yeah, I mean, we had a similar response from Northern Ireland, their health minister, and it's disappointing because I think, why would you not want to learn?
Yeah.
And that's, the only intention from us is to prevent avoidable deaths, yeah, and make services better and, you know, a better experience for people.
They're also missing the opportunity for a positive spin on things. If they're saying there's no issue here in Northern Ireland, no issue in Wales, then let that be publicised. Let's learn from Wales.
Absolutely.
You know, it's really difficult. One of my very close friends is a senior midwife in Wales, and I have no doubt that the care she is providing is wonderful. And I want it to be clear that we're not saying that this is every single midwife, every single obstetrician. It's very much, we know it's the minority, but I think the focus is the system, like the system around them. What we'll do is we'll put a link to your campaign, your petition in this podcast. So please go and sign it because it is so important and it is one of the main ways to put it on people's agenda. So we've talked about obviously some hurdles that you're facing with the campaign, but have there been any positive steps that you've taken?
We have met with the CQC and they have agreed that it would be a good idea for the four nations health regulators to create an alliance for learning. So I think that's a positive step. They weren't quite on with this with the full inquiry. But I think any steps forward where there's learning involved and sharing that good practice as well.
Because, yeah,
you know, where there is good practice, it's really important to celebrate that and share it so far and as far and wide as they can.
And I guess just like we saw with Donna Ockenden's inquiry at SAF, once somebody says, okay, let's give it a go, it does tend to snowball. And I think, yeah, any step that can be taken, I'm sure it will become quite clear that this is going to be bigger than what they envisioned to start with. I did also see Baroness Cumberledge supported in the House of Lords at the end of January. So she's always been a big advocate for safer maternity care. So that's really positive. I do think that it is hot news at the moment. There's lots and lots of media about maternity care. I think it's probably the most prolific it's ever been. So hopefully the more we lend our voice to it, and like, I just want to wish you all the best with your campaign. And if there's anything that we can do to support it, like I said, go and sign it.
Yes, if you haven't already, please sign the petition.
Yeah, but thanks. Thank you for coming to talk to me. I know that it's really a lot to go through all the time, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Laura and our special guest, Kaylee. If you have a legal issue you'd like me to put to our team to cover in an upcoming episode, please let me know by visiting lblaw.co.uk/podcast. Thanks for listening. If you found the conversation useful, please remember to follow or subscribe on your app so you're notified of new releases when they come out every Monday. Speak to you next week.
That was The Legal Lounge from Lanyon Bowdler Solicitors. Visit lblaw.co.uk/podcast for helpful resources, and please do follow or subscribe on your podcast app so you never miss an episode.